The following is a class on the Srimad Bhagavatam, 12th canto, 3rd chapter, text number 31, by His Divine Grace Srila Tamal Krishna Goswami Maharaj Gurudev, given April 18, 1985, in Dallas, Texas.
Cha and Sriha,
the women.
Asati,
unchaste.
Translation and purport by Srila Acharyadev. Because of the bad qualities of the age of Kali, human beings will become short-sighted, unfortunate, gluttonous, lustful, and poverty-stricken. The women, becoming unchaste, will freely wander from one man to the next. In the age of Kali, certain pseudo-intellectuals seeking individual freedom support sexual promiscuity. In fact, identification of the self with the body and the pursuit of individual freedom in the body rather than in the soul are signs of the most dismal ignorance and slavery to lust. When women are unchaste, many children are born out of wedlock as products of lust. These children grow up in psychologically unfavorable circumstances, and a neurotic, ignorant society arises. Symptoms of this are already manifest throughout the world. So continuing in our appraisal of the present age, here are some more symptoms which we may consider in light of the present circumstances which we find within the world. Bad qualities in the age of Kali are that human beings will become short-sighted. Short-sighted means that only seeing as far as one's immediate needs are concerned. Just like a foolish animal is sometimes taken to the slaughterhouse and they give the animal something to eat so that he's immediately satisfied and doesn't see that the animal in front of him has had his head cut off. He's so short-sighted that he doesn't think that this is happening before me, it will happen to me. He's simply thinking, somehow I'm eating, and that is okay. So similarly, people are like animals. And if they can simply eat nicely, they don't worry for the future. They don't think that what will happen to me when I go old, what will happen to me has happened already to my forefathers. My father has died. My father's father has died. My father's father's father has died. So I must also die. No one thinks like that. Somehow people put the thought of death out of their minds. They don't want to consider what is coming in the future. They're very short-sighted. Let me enjoy now, and if I can put enough nows together, one after another, I will never have to be in any difficulty. They don't think that one day all the nows will finish, and the life will end. Just like people try to enjoy sex. A man is led by his sexual appetite to go to a prostitute. He does not care even that this prostitute may have a venereal disease and I may become infected by such a venereal disease and I will have to suffer in such a way that I may get a disease that my whole life I will have to suffer. But he doesn't think like that. He thinks, somehow let me enjoy even 5-10 minutes, never mind the future. So this type of impulsive behavior is not symptomatic of humans, not civilized humans. It's symptomatic of animals. Therefore, we are living in a world of animals, not real humans. They are very short-sighted. They do not know that the goal of life is to attain love for Krishna. And therefore, when they see us voluntarily renouncing immediate sense enjoyment, they think how foolish these people are, believing so strongly in a future and being willing to give up the present joys of life. This is how they view our behavior. Why are you performing this tapasya, this austerity? Why don't you be like us? Eat, drink, and be merry. Enjoy now. Trust no future. This is what they think. But we understand Mahajanayena Gata Sabhanta. We have seen what the path of the great souls has achieved for them, and therefore we're confident of the same success if we follow strictly this path. We have seen a personality like Prabhupada, and this vision that we had of Prabhupada's behavior, Prabhupada's consciousness, Prabhupada's pleasure in spiritual life has given us the idea now that if we do what he has said and we follow the path which he has chalked out, then that same happiness, that same pleasure, the same consciousness will come to us. Mahajanayena gata sapanta. Therefore, we know that the future makes the present austerities worthwhile. There's no doubt that it is an austerity. Krishna consciousness means to voluntarily accept so many austerities. And the degree to which you're able to regulate and discipline yourself is the degree to which you will experience quick success in spiritual life. Now, the consciousness should be fixed in such a way that each person should ask themselves daily, am I doing service to Krishna in the best way possible? Sometimes I see devotees being very casual in their use of time. But the sign of an advanced devotee is that he's very concerned whether he's being of the optimum service in Krishna, for Krishna. He's very concerned, is Krishna able to utilize me to the fullest degree at every moment? People make plans. Sometimes I see devotees make plans for the future, for the future. But the present evades them. And living in the future in this way, one will never get that future. Just like a responsible man, if he wants to change his job, he will make certain that while he's changing or looking for a new job, the income still comes in. So we have to understand in the same way that as we make various changes within our life, that does not make it necessary to make our service to Krishna any less. Just like it's said that when you offer a particular preparation to the deity at a certain time, or when you make an offering to the deity, certain number of offerings in a day, you cannot reduce that offering once it's established. If you've got 3 offerings a day, you must, if anything, maintain or go to 4. You cannot go to 1 or 2 offerings. So in the same way, once you've achieved a certain level of devotional service to Krishna, you should understand that Krishna is expecting that much service from you. Just as if you were to have a family and they become accustomed to a certain standard, they won't be able to accept a lesser standard. You have to do that. You have to maintain that level. So similarly in spiritual life, you have to maintain the level of service that you've offered to Krishna. And if you want to take up something new, or you're thinking to take up something new, you have to see that while those thoughts are going on, your service does not become reduced. Otherwise, it becomes a regressive factor, not progressive. This is a sign of someone who's actually responsible in spiritual life and has not become a little bit overwhelmed on the mental platform or sensual platform. One is unfortunate. That misfortune refers to karma. We are fortunate or unfortunate due to our karma. Karma means, hopefully, before you came to Krishna consciousness. Hopefully. Sometimes it means after coming to Krishna consciousness. That's not very good. Because no new karma should develop after taking initiation. Taking initiation means you become freed from karma. But at the same time, if after initiation you commit mistakes, then again you start to revolve in this karma chakra, this circle of karmic reaction. Just like putting back the plug into the socket and the fan starts to revolve again. Now we are fortunate or unfortunate due to karma. Just like we see devotees. Some devotees are obviously suffering still the results of karma from previous life. Means that they have, their minds don't always work fully, or they become angry very easily due to a particular nature of their body, too much of the mode of passion, or speculate too much, or they suffer in some physical way, some disabling situation of the body. So, in this age of Kali, everybody is unfortunate. That means everyone is suffering from some type of bad karma. Now, there is a way to overcome the disadvantages of bad karma. And that is if you know how to take full shelter of your spiritual master in Krishna. Then even though there are shortcomings, Krishna makes them up. And it's described that whatever Krishna says, that whenever anyone serves me with love and devotion, I carry what they have, I preserve what they have, and carry what they lack. This is a promise of Krishna. Ananyas chintayantomam yejanaha pariyupashate tesham nityapiyuktanam yogakshemam bahamiham. Whatever is lacking, Krishna will make up for you. And whatever good you have, he'll preserve, if you take full shelter of him. So one who is fully Krishna conscious doesn't become affected by past karma. I always speak to so many of you privately, and you know, we recognize that there are certain problems which you're facing due to the modes of material nature which are affecting you. Goodness, passion, or ignorance, and due to something which has happened in the past. So you have to recognize these things clearly and realize that the only way to make up for this is to take shelter of Guru and Krishna. Take shelter of the process of devotional service very strictly, and you can make up the shortcomings. Otherwise, you're going to be affected by your previous karma. And it becomes very hard, therefore, spiritual life. It's hard. Rupa Goswami says it will be hard, but he advises that if one is ready to tolerate and not become discouraged due to some disability, due to the past activities of one's life before becoming a devotee, and just make an arrangement to try that much harder to counteract the difficulty, Krishna will help you. Krishna will help you. Sometimes we see devotees try and fail, try and fail, try and fail. If it becomes too much, then it means they should try a little less. That has to be done with the guidance of the spiritual master. Everybody has to attempt a level of devotional service which is feasible. Otherwise, if you attempt too much, that is called over-endeavor. What is over-endeavor for one person may be an under-endeavor for someone else. So, just as when a student comes into the school, the teacher has to place a student on a certain level of education. Similarly, the spiritual master has to recognize the degree of attachment which a disciple has and engage the disciple accordingly in a way where they can gradually get free from that attachment. If the disciple is misengaged in the wrong way, then all that happens is that the attachment becomes stronger, not weaker. So it's very important that each person situate themselves with the help of Guru and Sadhu and Shastra in the proper level of devotional activities, in the proper type of devotional activities, in the proper situation of devotional life. Then progress becomes progressive. Progress becomes straightforward instead of progressing and regressing. That's very common, we see, that people make advancement and then they go backwards. That's not good. You should try to see that your spiritual life goes like this, all the way back to Godhead. Not that it goes forward and then it slumps. You see, and then you try to bring it up and you have to work so hard just to get back to the level that you were on. And it's so discouraging and then slump more. And then it's that much more difficult to bring it up again. Better to have gone slowly but surely, progressively higher. So at the same time, if you don't go quickly enough, if you underestimate your ability, that's also not good. Because if you don't do enough service, then the opposite can happen. Then you can fall downwards. Instead, you may go slow, but it'll go like this, slowly downwards. So it has to be just the right degree of devotional practices, etc. Then it's nice. The clothes have to be fitted properly to the body. So our similarly, our service has to be fitted suitably to each person's nature and needs, spiritual needs. Here it mentions that in the Kali Yuga, people will eat excessively. They will be gluttons. And we see that the tongue is extremely voracious. Everybody has to know how much they need to eat. In the Bhagavad Gita, it is mentioned, don't eat too much and don't eat too little. Don't sleep too much and don't sleep too little. Now, eating and sleeping is extremely important. If you do it just the right amount, then you will have no problems. And if you don't do it properly, then you have problems. Just like we see our devotees, most of the devotees in America, especially, and maybe in other Western countries, they develop some physical disability after a few years in Krishna consciousness. Personally, I feel very fortunate because within a year and a half after being in the movement, I was whisked off to India by Prabhupada. So I got the opportunity to not only observe personally how Prabhupada was living and eating and sleeping, but I was able to be in a situation where I had to be very careful about what I ate. And fortunately, we were always invited to very good homes, and they knew exactly how to cook. And everything was adjusted just right to eat the right foods, etc. But it was very difficult otherwise when I first joined, because we did not have that knowledge of what to eat, what not to eat. Similarly, I see that devotees are not careful about their health, maybe because of sankirtan or some other demanding service, they think that they can neglect the way they're eating. One devotee told me that when she eats lunch, it takes her 2 hours to eat her lunch because she eats a little bit bite here and a little bite there, you know, in between her different sales on sankirtan. And this way she eats over a period of 2 hours. She's eating anxiety. And that can only produce illness to eat like that. And you have to know what foods are suitable to your body. Each person has to realize this. And you should know what bodily weight is suitable. Some people should be more thin. Some people have to be a little bit more thick. It depends upon the bonal skeletal structure. What is the weight that you should have? And you'll know it. You'll feel yourself quite fit when you're at the right weight. And you have to maintain that weight. These things are not just for the karmis, they're for devotees as well, to keep physically fit. And you have to know how to have a balanced diet. You have to eat in a nice way, with good consciousness. Just like you have to make sure that when you eat, For example, if you're on Sankirtan, you cannot eat in the place where you're working. You see, you have to have someone cover the place or look after it, and then you have to go to a spot, even if it's for 10 or 15 or 20 minutes, which is completely peaceful, and take your lunch. Otherwise, you get sick. It's very important, the atmosphere of the place. You see, where you're eating. So if the devotees are eating, it has to be peaceful. It has to be arranged by the management in such a way that the devotees sit down and take prasadam in the proper atmosphere. Otherwise, you will not get the benefit of the food you're eating. The conversation or sound vibrations have to be very pleasing while you're eating. Or no sound at all is also all right. Not some, excitement and this type of thing. That's not good. And the foods have to be prepared properly. If possible, you should always eat food that is hot. Just like if someone gives you a cold chapati, then you have to recognize you're going to have to chew that chapati twice as much. Or you cannot digest it. Because you have to make up for it. If you don't do that, then instead of the heat in the chapati, your stomach has to create the heat to digest. So you have to chew twice as long. If someone gives you something that's fried and it's cold, don't eat it. I wouldn't eat it because you can't digest that unless you're very young. Children can digest anything. And a person who's 20 can nearly digest anything. But if you keep going on that, by 25, 30, you won't be able to digest that way. So you put things in your stomach and they don't get digested. And then you get sick and you don't know, why am I sick? So eating gluttonous, hopefully devotees are not gluttonous. They should not be. But we should still recognize that there are so many sensible things that have to be understood about eating. Eating too little is just as bad as eating too much. That's also a disease, undereating. That's a disease. You see? Not to have a good appetite, that's not a sign of good health. It's a disease. Don't confuse, having no appetite with being renounced. It's not at all a question of renunciation. Just because, supposing someone got castrated and then he says, I don't engage in sex life. That doesn't mean he doesn't have sex desire. It just means he's castrated. He has no ability to have sex life. So because you have no appetite and you're ill, don't think that that's a sign that you see how renounced this person is. Sometimes devotees do that artificially. That's also not good. You have to know, and then you have to know how your bodily metabolism works. Some people will not be able to digest very much in the morning. But then if they eat a big meal in the morning, then they'll get sick. At the same time, if someone cannot digest very much in the morning, still he should force himself or herself to eat something. Because if you go without anything and then you start working, that's also very bad. So you have to know all these things. This is a common sense. Practical points of good health. And if you don't understand these points, it's as important to understand these points as it is to chant Hare Krishna. Because if you don't do these things, then you won't have the strength to chant Hare Krishna. You won't have the health. Sometimes I was accused of being a hypochondriac. Is that the word, hypochondriac? I remember in the New York Temple on 55th Street, whenever I'd go in the elevator, I'd always put my sannyas, whatever this yucky is called, I always used to go like this, whenever I'd ride in the elevator, because I was afraid that for the, 5 minutes I'm riding up and down, there's someone in that elevator's got a cold or something, and I didn't want to get sick. I never want to get sick because I'm afraid as soon as I get sick, my service to Krishna is interfered with, and I'm very much afraid of that. So I don't want to get sick. But at the same time, once I get sick, I don't act as if I'm not sick. I take care of my health. Chanaka Pandit says, do not neglect disease, fire, or debt. If there's a big fire, don't say I have to do something else. Put out that fire. And if you're ill, don't say you have anything else to do except get over that illness. That's your main business. Because then when you're over the illness, then you can do nice service again. I'm spending a lot of time on such a mundane thing or a simple thing because it's not so understood. It's so misunderstood that I'm spending a lot of time on it. Very few people sitting here know properly how to eat and take rest, although it's the most basic thing that everyone should have learned. Unfortunately, we were not born in Krishna consciousness. We didn't get nice training. Lustful people in this age are lusty. They are lustful, is understood. Everybody has got this sex impulse very strongly now. So what to do about it? Even marriage is not such a simple solution for lustiness. Real fact is that the only thing which can reduce this lusty tendency is devotional service. It counteracts lustiness. Marriage in itself will not do that, because we see so many times people get married and they just engage in sex life. Marriage may certainly be a 50% solution to the problem of being too much lustful. But in itself, it's not enough. The husband and the wife have to be engaged in devotional service. Otherwise, their minds will certainly come to the point of desiring sex. So in our Krishna consciousness movement, we encourage that if one is too impassioned, then get married. But within marriage, both the parties engage in Krishna service. Otherwise, the result will be sense gratification. And that's very regrettable to see that, if a man or a woman think that getting married will be the solution and then they fall into sense gratification. And people are poverty-stricken. Poverty is not a sign of good fortune. Poverty, we do not want to see this poverty-stricken condition. In our movement, we are trying to now encourage the householders not to be poverty-stricken. That's better, not to be poverty-stricken. However, that does not mean that a householder should become excessively wealthy and hoard wealth. A Krishna-conscious person only keeps as much as is required for themselves, and the balance is used in Krishna's service. Otherwise, you will lose that wealth. Wealth which is not used in the service of Krishna is actually stolen property. So one should not amass unnecessary wealth. Neither should one be poverty-stricken, because it's said that a grihastha makes advancement in spiritual life by supporting the other ashrams, the brahmachari, vanaprastha, and sannyas ashram. So this is one of the duties of a grihastha, to be able to give in charity. Of course, we have to see, if someone is full-time engaged in Krishna's service, then it's to be understood that they're giving in charity their entire life. But then you have to do that. We have to see that quality manifested. And very often we find that there is a desire on the part of the grihastha not to have to... first of all, there is some desire for a particular situation, living condition, etc. Then they may have to earn on their own. And no one likes to be humiliated or embarrassed to have to beg. A grihastha doesn't find that very palatable, to have to beg for some simple needs of the family. And neither is our institution meant for that purpose. So if a grihastha finds the situation too humiliating, then it is best that they earn on their own in a way where they can feel respectable. And that's important. There has to be self-respect on the part of the individual members of our movement. Otherwise, they lose their good qualities. So this has to be done carefully, with great consideration given how each person can be situated nicely according to their natures. Someone can live very, very austerely and doesn't mind that humbling situation. But our movement has to arrange in such a way that no one loses their self-respect. That will not be good. Let's see. The women, here it mentions, will become unchaste and freely wander from one man to the next. So that is, of course, Srila Charidev has mentioned how sometimes we see this women's lib movement. Many men support women's lib. And those men are looked upon as being very liberal and compassionate and concerned. But we've actually understood from Prabhupada's statements that actually these men are supporting the women's lib movement so that they can take more advantage of having free sex with the women. It's not a question of women's lib. What does liberation mean? Liberation means to be free from the entanglement of the pangs of material existence. To be liberated means to be liberated from suffering. How has women's lib lessened the suffering of a woman who say that they feel that they should always be protected by a man? And they say, don't you, that's not very nice, that's like slavery. And our devotee women say they don't feel like they're slaves, they feel like they're being protected with love by the men. And that they feel very satisfied in that way, and they feel very free and easy in their mind to engage in service to Krishna because of this, whereas you're in complete anxiety, trying to maintain independently of any man. We see that in the animal society, in all societies, generally speaking, the male maintains the family, the female, the opposite sex, that's there. So when women are not given proper protection, then they're allowed to move freely, and women, it is said that women are much, much more lusty than men. So if allowed to go on their own, they will wander from one man to the next. And that creates chaos in society. So many children are born without fathers to look after them, and the problem becomes compounded, and the whole world becomes filled with such unwanted population. So these are the symptoms. In our society, we have to be very careful about this. As far as possible, every woman must be married. And once they're married, they should not think of a divorce. Because then what will happen after divorce? They'll think of getting married again. Because it mentions that in this age, women will not be able to maintain the principle of one husband. If they lose their husband, they'll think of getting another husband and another husband. And thus, the society becomes polluted. Therefore, we do not encourage divorce. Every woman has to be protected as far as possible. And if there's a situation where there's no husband or no son, then the society has to very carefully give protection to such a woman. But very carefully, you see, that there should be no mistake made by those who are protecting her. So this is a difficult thing. Gradually, we hope to see the establishment of the system which is described in the Bhagavatam, and it will happen where the family units will be established generation for generation after generation, so it naturally will come that women will be protected by their family members. Our generation is difficult. This 50 years, 60 years, 70 years, we have to undergo a lot of difficulty until the Vedic culture is established. That means there are going to be so many anomalies, not so ideal situations. We have to adjust them with Krishna consciousness. Are there any questions? Radha Vinod.
This proper engagement may take some time to come for the devotee, or I'll start to come immediately. Since I see it takes some time for the devotee to answer.
Sometimes it takes time.
It's due to the devotee, due to the...
Both. It may be due to the devotee, and it's not so easy, you know. Just like a child. When a child first comes to school, it takes a while to understand the real inclination of the child, what his real nature is, because he's very young. Just like children, don't they all look so innocent and pure? You know? And so free from sex agitation. But give them a few years and, you know, then you really see their true nature come out. It takes time to the nature to manifest. So similarly, with new devotees, it may take some time to gradually be able to perceive what their real ability and nature is and how to engage them properly. Yes.
Srila Gurudev, in connection to the point you made about the grihasthas going out and becoming respectable and that sort of thing, sometimes we see that grihasthas will go into an independent business and they'll think, well, I have to become respectable. And then years go by and they're always becoming respectable, but we see that they don't, they say they haven't attained that certain level of living standard that they feel is necessary for them, or that what they should attain. And then, you know, they never really contribute to the Krishna consciousness movement because they say, well, I'm working on, I'm reinvesting my business, so many different excuses. So who determines what is the level they should attain to, what is respectable, and, you know, what they should actually be doing to further the Krishna consciousness movement?
Therefore, I said in my lecture that once you offer service to Krishna, you cannot take a lesser position of service. So when you go for becoming respectable, you have to do that in addition to maintaining the service that you've already been at a level of offering to Krishna. Because you see, it's not just that we are members of one family. I and my wife and my two or three children, that is my family. There's another family which you are also party to. Just like in India, there's the father and he has 5-6 sons. So no son thinks that my family means myself and my wife and children. They think my family means my father and all my brothers and all of the wives and all of the children and my mother. And when he thinks that I have to maintain my family, he doesn't think I have to maintain my husband or my wife, my children. He thinks I have to help to see that the whole family fortune is properly maintained. So it mentions in an earlier verse, you may remember, that people will only be able in the Kali Yuga to live with their wife and children. And their family will become reduced to that understanding. But in Krishna consciousness means that we're not supposed to be susceptible to the influence of the Kali Yuga. In other words, we, devotees of God, should be living on a much better consciousness than Kali Yuga mentality. So we should not be thinking of only myself, my wife, my children. This is our family. And when we think of, am I maintaining properly, we have to see, is my whole family maintained properly? You cannot neglect. Imagine, would that be very loving if a brother thinks that, well, I have to look after my wife and kids, and I'm sorry that my father and mother are suffering. I'm sorry that my other brothers are suffering, but there's just nothing I can do. I've got to take care of myself. That's the Kali Yuga. That's Kali Yuga. That's not the way it would be normally in Vedic society. And it is unfortunate that devotees take this attitude. And I don't think that they get the same mercy, generally speaking. They will not get the same mercy. I think our movement cannot afford that mentality. At the same time, I understand that it's difficult for one to be thinking like this, especially it's hard to earn enough. But the fact is that if everybody suddenly says that I have to maintain in a better standard, then what will happen to Krishna? This is Krishna's home. There has to be an ongoing contribution made to Krishna. You cannot say, I need 1 year, 2 years to stabilize. In the meantime, Krishna, please fast. If you say, well, I'm not saying that others will feed Krishna, but that's not the way you should take it, that someone else is doing service to Krishna for a while I do not have to do. Sometimes devotees tell me that I'm serving Krishna, I'm offering everything to Krishna in my home. But if Krishna in the home is the same as Krishna here, why don't you offer everything to this Krishna? The difference is that this Krishna doesn't give everything back. Something should be done. When someone starts a business or someone starts work, still they should give up to 50%. That means at least give 10%. Every Christian gives 10%. I mean, if you can't even give 10%, you're not even as good as a Christian. That's a fact. Many churches will not allow you to be a member if you don't give 10%. In our philosophy, it says 50%. It never says anything. It says 50%. And there are many examples of giving 50% in our scripture. Now, if you say you cannot afford it, then give 10% at least. But if you give no percent on the promise of a post-dated check, as you say, that check may never come. Then what credit do you get for all the years of work? At least if you're giving 10%, you're getting 10% credit. Krishna sees your effort and he'll help you to give more gradually. I don't believe that if someone can live on 100%, I think they can live on 90%. I really find it hard to believe that you cannot make do on 90%. Maybe it'll require a little less standard, but then do that less standard. Give that 10% to Krishna. It's a token offering. It may not amount to a lot, but it shows that your heart is not misunderstanding Krishna's needs. That's my feeling. If I was in a situation where I felt that I have to better my situation, then I would not suddenly cut off the society that I have always lived in and with. Cut off my family and said, now I got to take care of myself. But don't worry, I will take care of you. No doubt you have that intention. But in the meantime, how can you neglect the ongoing responsibility? We are not only wedded to a wife and children. We're also wedded to a family which goes way beyond the wife and children. That's what it means to be a member of this movement. It is a society. There are responsibility, obligations to this society. Another question? Yes? Goes to Bihar.
Srila Gurudev, you were mentioning about the importance of self-respect within our movement. My question is, how important is the need of helping devotees understand their full creative potential? Because it seems as though self-respect is based or founded upon an individual's creative impulse. And if that becomes stifled, then a person's self-respect necessarily seems to dwindle. So how important are those two?
Very important. Very important. It's unfortunate that the answer will come like this, that sometimes the son, on account of the directions or activities of the father, a dutiful son has to take responsibility for whatever father has done. So sometimes a son may want to do so many things, but if the father leaves big debts behind him and leaves this body, then the son has to take responsibility for those debts. So the fact is that myself and my generation of devotees, we expanded this movement in such a way, which actually was very quick, you know, maybe a little too quick in some respects. And as a result, the next generation now has to help to bear the consequences of that, even sometimes at the sacrifice of one's personal, what did you call it, potentials and abilities. In other words, one may be required to do so many things initially to help to alleviate any indebtedness or whatever it may be. Gradually, if we do that together, we'll see that there will be an opportunity to manifest our abilities. One has to be very faithful and patient that that time will come. I always tell the devotees that. Because it's obvious that some devotees have certain abilities which are not being utilized at this time due to an overall situation we find ourselves in. But what shall we do? Shall we just erase everything and make believe that we don't have to have the responsibility of a big community like this? No, obviously not. We have to maintain it. Gradually, if we persevere, we'll come out of this situation. Gradually, it may take 5 years, 10 years, but that's all right. We're establishing a very important... I meet many people. Yesterday I met a woman reporter from the Times Herald. She's been coming here for at least, 12, 15 years to our centers in Dallas. She sees a tremendous change in our movement. She said, every encounter I used to have was unpleasant. She used to come to when the temple wasn't even in this location. She was coming back in 1970. She said, every contact I used to have with your members was unpleasant. She says, now every contact I have is very pleasant. She said, the people, the devotees have definitely entered into a different mood of dealings with the public. She was very much appreciative. What to speak of how she appreciates the methods that we're engaging in terms of reaching out to the public in ways in which the public can understand us better. So there's really people on the outside who know anything about us are extremely impressed with the development of our movement here. It may be hard for us to see that living right in the midst of it, just like it's hard for you to see whether or not you're growing when you're a young person. But your father or mother sees over a year's time, wow, you've grown so much. Or someone who just sees you once in a year sees, wow, you've shot up. So, you know, we may not see because we're always in the center of the thing. But the outsiders who are looking at our movement, who are observing it, are extremely impressed with the very rapid progress that they see our movement making. They see us making very quick progress here. People who are observing our movement from the outside. So you should feel encouraged that all of the hard work that everybody's doing here is not at all going in vain. Another question? Auntie?
You spoke about a little bit about women in Kali Yuga. From what about the position of a woman who is in Krishna consciousness and has a Krishna conscious husband, but perhaps isn't so Krishna conscious and he's exploiting her? What is her duty? What is her position?
If the husband is a devotee and the wife is a devotee, but still the husband is exploiting the wife, that means he's not a very good devotee. So the woman should request, my dear husband, please may we go together to discuss with our spiritual master what can be done. Because I don't want to disobey you, I want to help you. I have married you to be very faithful and serve you and assist you. And yet, you're also supposed to protect and help me. It should be two ways. So perhaps our spiritual master, or perhaps, you know, the senior Vaishnava, if it's not, the spiritual master is not present, if it's a disciple, for example, of Prabhupada's, can give us some guidance on how we can adjust this so that you'll feel very satisfied and I'll also feel satisfied. They may have to take help like this from the superior Vaishnava. Sometimes you cannot always solve these problems, you know. It's not, just like in the material world, they have marriage counselors. And I'm sure in the Vedic times, you know, when there was some difficulty, they would go to the spiritual master or to a Vaishnava or to the father and mother. Somehow they would take the help of the elders to solve such a problem. So after a while, you have to try to solve that problem. Huh?
What if it can't be solved?
That's a what if. We have to try as far as possible to solve these problems. Ultimately, there's a statement in the Shastra, in the Bhagavatam, it's stated that if a woman's husband is fallen, that means fallen beyond the point that he's unwilling to rectify, then she has the right to leave him. She has that right, according to the Bhagavatam. But we want to try to avoid that as far as possible, because then someone has to protect her. Someone has to protect her. The husband is naturally the protector. So if you lose that husband's protection, then who's going to protect? Someone has to be there to protect. Your father has to be willing, but generally your father is not very willing. Of course, Krishna can protect. Therefore, Prabhupada used to say to somebody whose husband took sannyas, now you take protection from Krishna. You turn to Krishna and make him your husband. And Krishna will give that protection to any woman who's in such a difficult situation. Krishna will become her husband. But she better be very Krishna conscious. Because if she's not, she won't know how to make Krishna her husband, and then she has no protection except from Maya. And then she'll again look for another man. That is not very good. That is detestable.
Even if the desires, for example, even if a woman in Krishna consciousness feels that she very much isn't finished with her family life,
then how can she leave her husband?
She's being exploited.
Well, take your pick. You can't have your cake and eat it. Take your husband with the family, or if you say, I'm being exploited but I want to enjoy family life, then you have to stay with your husband and tolerate, or try to solve the problem, obviously, or else tolerate. And if you find it impossible, then you have to give up the idea of family life once and for all. No second chances. Huh? Yeah, we're speaking on the Vyasa sign. You want us to speak to some other system? Huh?
Are you sure?
What?
That that's the Vedic state.
Yes, you don't think it is?
No, I agree.
I hope it is. I think it is. I know it is. Stated that way in Shastra, it's stated that way by Prabhupada, and we practically can experience that. It's definitely the right system. Now, sometimes the spiritual master or someone will make an adjustment to try and preserve the person in spiritual life. You see? We have had to do that sometimes here. But that's not recommended, and it's very exceptional. And if it becomes the rule, then you will see, you know, that the authorities will become extremely renounced. And I can tell you, warn you too, not just tell you, but warn you about this point, that Prabhupada became so disgusted with the Grihastha disciples that he gave up any involvement whatsoever in their lives, with their personal affairs. Now, I'm still somewhat involving myself to try and give some guidance, but if I get taken advantage of, then I will completely detach myself from such involvement to the loss of everybody. Because if no one will follow these words, then what is the use of becoming involved? Prabhupada became disgusted with it. He felt there was no use in putting his energy in that direction because no one would listen.